Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you feel like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. And not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real, hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hi, this is Imran Ahmed, founder and CEO of The Business of Fashion. Welcome to the BOF podcast. It's Friday, March 17th. Larry Miller worked alongside Michael Jordan to build the Jordan brand, which now does more than $5 billion in revenue. But Larry's journey to the C-suite was a unique one. Growing up in West Philadelphia, he joined a gang. This led him to serve multiple prison sentences for a series of crimes, including second-degree murder. Through a rehabilitation program, Larry was able to begin his college education while still in prison, and upon his release, he started his career and eventually found himself working for Nike under founder Phil Knight. He became the first Black vice president in apparel at the company before going on to become president of Jordan Brand in 1999. During BOF Voices 2022, Larry Miller sat down with UTA executive Darnell Strum to share his powerful personal story, talk about the power of second chances, and explain how he found redemption. Here's Larry Miller with Darnell Strum on the BOF podcast.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Darnell Strum. I'm a partner at United Talent Agency and have been in the media and entertainment business for about 15 years. And so as a Black agent and executive, I've been very familiar with the legend that is Mr. Larry Miller, who's had this extraordinary career. So I thought I was very familiar with his story. Larry's obviously now the chairman of the Jordan brand at Nike, but I realized that I didn't know his full story and I want us to go on that journey right now. But I want to start off first talking about your career, because over the last 40 plus years, you've built an extraordinary, amazing career. And then in a few minutes, though, we're going to talk about your past, because I think it's your past that makes your personal story so unique and the trajectory of this incredible career that you've had, some people might find unexpected. So first, I want to talk about the early days of your career. You worked at a number of amazing companies from Campbell's Soup to Kraft, and you didn't get to Nike until 1997. Were there any opportunities or examples that happened back then that in the early days of your career that kind of prepared you for the opportunity you would have later at Nike?
Yeah, there were. Actually, my first job out of college was I worked for Campbell Soup Company, and it was a trainee program where they hired people right out of college in accounting. My undergraduate degree is in accounting. And it was a trainee program where you spent 2 years in four different jobs. So you do 6 months in four jobs. And then at the end of the 2 years, they would put you in a permanent job. My first role was in corporate accounting. And when my 6 months was up, they wanted me to stay. So I ended up, instead of waiting 2 years to get that promotion and the permanent job, I got it in 6 months. But the thing that really helped to shape my way of thinking is that one of the things I focused on was, even though my job was in accounting and I was an accountant, I wanted to learn as much as I could about the rest of the business. I wanted to know as much as I could about how it all came together, because I figured that could help me to do my job. If I understood what we were trying to accomplish and what the goals were and what different departments contributed, that then I could actually do my job better. So that was one of the things that I started early in my career and continue to do that as I move forward.
So in 1997, you make history because you take on a role at Nike as a VP in apparel, making you the first black VP in the history of the company. And then 2 years later, you make history again and you become president of the Jordan brand. Talk to us about what it was like being in Nike in that time period. I feel like in the late 90s and early 2000s, you know, it was really an incredible time creatively at Nike. So tell us about your experience there.
So I worked for a company called Janssen. I was instrumental in putting together a deal between Nike and Janssen, where Nike licensed their brand to us to make swimwear. But through that process, I got to know some of the people at Nike, and one of the guys was the person who headed up global apparel. And he and I would get together from time to time and have dinner and talk about what was going on with the business. And I remember the last time we did that, I'm driving home and I'm like, man, I feel like I just got interviewed. And sure enough, 2 weeks later, he called and said, hey, would you have any interest in coming to work for Nike? And so I started there as the head of apparel in the U.S., which was about a $1 billion business at that point. And about a year and a half or so in, Michael Jordan was about to retire from the Bulls for the last time. And so the conversation was, what do we do now? Because the formula was, we create a cool shoe, we do some advertising with Bugs Bunny or Spike Lee or someone, and then Michael Jordan wears these shoes 82 games and into the playoffs. That was the formula of how we were going to sell shoes. Well, now he's retiring, and the big piece of that formula is coming out. A lot of people thought, hey, it was a nice run, but it's over. Both internally and externally, people inside the company and some of our key retailers all felt like, hey, this is over. But there were some of us, myself included, who felt like we had an opportunity to build something beyond Michael Jordan's playing days. So Phil Knight asked me to put a team together, put strategies together on how we were going to take that logo that people knew was part of Nike basketball and really evolve it into a brand. And when we started that, the Jordan business was about $140, $150 million. And this year, it's going to be about $5.5 billion. So we did okay.
Call that
we did
some growth.
We did something right.
How did you feel when Jordan came out of retirement again and went back to go
that,
play for
that
the
was
Wizards?
Scary.
You're like, what are you going to do, man?
That was really scary. That was really scary because our deal was we were going to build our brand based on the characteristics that people knew about Michael Jordan. So we wanted our brand to represent those characteristics of hard work, determination, excellence. I mean, back then it was people would refer to the Michael Jordan of, the Michael Jordan of wines, the Michael Jordan, because Michael Jordan was considered the best. And we wanted to make sure that the brand represented that. So we really built the brand based on those characteristics. And when he decided to come back with the Wizards, it scared the shit out of us. Because we were like, is he going to somehow tarnish the thing that we're building this brand right on? Fortunately, it did not. He didn't play quite as well as he did with the Bulls, yeah, but it did not tarnish the image. And so we were able to continue to build on it.
I think it's fascinating, you know, in business, partnerships are extremely important. And you got to work with and learn from two of the legends, Phil Knight, the founder of Nike, and Michael Jordan. How important have those relationships become in your life?
Extremely. I mean, to me, when we were building the Jordan brand, there was a lot of internal resistance. We had to fight through a lot of battles and knock down a lot of barriers inside the company. But I always felt like, you know, I got MJ and Phil Knight. I don't care what anybody else thinks. I'm going to use that to push through this. And we did. So those relationships have been extremely important to me. Phil has been a great mentor, a great friend. MJ has been an incredible business partner to work with. Just like he pushed his team on the court, He pushed us the same way. And I really think that the secret sauce to our brand has been our connection to Michael Jordan, because he has made sure that everything we do represents him in the way he wants to be represented. And we've continued to push to represent the excellence and the things that Michael Jordan brought to the basketball court. We've looked to bring those things to the brand.
We'll be right back with more on the BOF podcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? For me, I got a chef-grade range recently, and now I'm cooking new things every single night. Seriously, no cuisine is off limits. The point is, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. I can picture myself with a car full of groceries, cruising down the highway, soaking up the sun with the available dynamic sky panorama glass roof. Ah, pure bliss. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX. Luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you feel like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. And not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff, with real, hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
So I want to pause there. We've done a quick zoom through of your incredible 40-plus year career, but I want to take a moment to kind of go back to where you started from, where you came from, because I think your personal story makes your trajectory quite unique. So you grew up in West Philadelphia, got into some trouble when you were younger. You were in a gang by the age of 13. Do you want to talk about that period of time in your life?
So when I was really young, like all through elementary school, I was like the smartest kid in the class, teacher's pet. And then as I got a little older, the streets started to pull me. I grew up in a neighborhood where, you know, not a great neighborhood. And around 12, 13 years old, I started getting pulled into the street life. I joined a gang, started skipping school, all those things. And when I was 16, I shot a kid and he died. And I was charged as an adult at 16 years old, pleaded guilty to second degree murder, was sentenced to 4.5 to 20 years. My family was able to pull together some money and get me an attorney who worked out a deal for me. And I pled guilty to second degree murder and was sentenced to 4.5 to 20 years. Did the 4.5, got out, still was caught up in the street life, was in and out of jail. It's really a revolving door, and it's hard to break that cycle once you get caught up in it. The last time I ended up going back to jail, I had 5 armed robbery charges and was sentenced to another 4 to 10 years. But when I was in jail that last time, they had a program there where you could actually take college classes inside the jail. And I'd gotten my GED earlier.
Just the equivalent to a high school diploma. Those who aren't from the U.S.
So the last time I was there, they had a program where you could take college classes inside the jail, and then you could qualify to move into these trailers that were outside the jail wall and leave every day and go to college and come back at the end of the night. Had to be back by 8 o'clock at night. Barely made it some nights. But through that program, I got my associate's degree. Transferred those credits to Temple University, moved to a halfway house in North Philadelphia, and got my bachelor's degree from Temple University.
Quick question on that. So you take advantage of these programs. A lot of these programs don't exist anymore in a lot of the prisons, but you take advantage of this program. But was there like a moment where you're like, okay, there's an opportunity here to pursue education instead of this other life? You know, that kind of crossroads moments that you see in movies. Like, what was that moment?
Well, the last time I went to jail, I had a daughter by the time I went to jail. And at that point, I said, you know what? I got to change my life. I can't continue to do this. And I was looking for a way to change my life. And education was available to me at that point. I got my bachelor's degree from Temple University in accounting and started my career working at Campbell Soup Company as an accountant. But when I was about to graduate from Temple, I had interviewed with a number of accounting firms, and there was one that I was really focused on. And I went there, spent the whole day interviewing with them. And all day in the back of my mind, I'm like, should I share my story with these people? Because I was concerned that if I did, it may not work out.
Back then, did they require, like, on applications?
Well, this was even before the application. This was just in the interview process. And so I went through the whole day, and in the back of my mind, I'm questioning, should I share my story? Finally, I get to the last person who was the hiring partner, and I said, okay, I'm going to share my story with this guy. So I sat down and I started to share with him. And as I'm talking, I could see his face changing. I could see it wasn't going the way I thought it was going to go. And by the end, he said, you know, wow, that's an incredible story. I'm sure you're going to do well. He reached in his pocket and pulled out an envelope. And he said, I have an offer letter here that I was all ready to give you, but I can't give it to you now. And he said, I'm sorry, I can't hire you, but I wish you the best. And at that point, I decided I wasn't going to share my story. I wasn't going to deny it. I wasn't going to lie. I wasn't going to hide from it. But if somebody else didn't bring it up, I wasn't going to bring it up. And for 40 years, I hid from that story. I avoided it and almost kind of put it out of my mind. But at the same time, I was really struggling because my whole life was concerned about being found out. My whole life was concerned around, hey, I'm building this career, and at any point, it could go away if someone finds out what's going on. I had recurring dreams of going back to jail. I'd wake up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat and just happy that I was at home in bed. I had migraines for years because I was holding all this in, and really no one knew about my past. And so my oldest daughter is the person that I have to credit for making me tell this story, because she worked on me for years. Dad, you have a story that can motivate and inspire some people. You need to tell it. And I was like, no.
When did she find out? When did you tell
her? Well,
I
mean, she grew up visiting me in jail. So yeah. She knew.
She knew.
she grew up, you know, talking to me on the phone in jail. And she watched my career. Yeah. So she was like, Dad, you've done some pretty incredible things. You need to share this story and show people that redemption is possible, that people can change, people can get past the obstacles that they've had to deal with in life. And I've come to the realization that a lot of times we are afraid to talk about the obstacles that we overcome. But in reality, there's no shame in overcoming obstacles. The shame is in not overcoming the obstacles. But if you have overcome some terrible things or bad things in your life, but you've gotten to a point where you've overcome them, there's really no shame in that. And my daughter kind of convinced me that I should share this story. And then I said, okay, well, if I'm going to do this, then we're going to do it together. So her and I actually wrote the book together.
So the book, which is called Jump, My Secret Journey from the Streets to the Boardroom, before you wrote the book, there's, I'm sure, a series of conversations that you need to have with people. Going back to that partnership, you know, Phil Knight, Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan's father was murdered, right? So one of your most important business partners could potentially be triggered by this information. And so what was it like, first of all, leading up to that conversation? I'm sure there was a lot of nerves that were involved. But what was the conversation like with Michael?
So I knew there were a number of people that I wanted to share the story with before they heard it another way, before they heard it through the media or heard it through the book. And at the top of that list was Michael Jordan and Phil Knight. Because again, working with those guys for years, they had no clue about my background. And so it was during COVID, so I set up calls with both of them and talked to Phil first. Somehow he responded to me quicker than MJ did. So I talked to Phil Knight first and kind of shared my story with him. And when I was done, he said, wow. He said, I didn't know what you wanted to talk to me about, but I definitely didn't expect it to be this. He said, but I want you to know, I think your story is inspiring and it's motivational and that you have to tell this story. And I will help you however I can. A couple days later, MJ and I connected and went through the same thing, kind of shared the story with him. And when I was done, there was a little silence on the other end of the phone. I'm like, oh, man, what's going on? And then finally he said, I agree with your daughter. You need to tell this story and I'll help you out any way I can. And Nike has been incredible in terms of the support and the encouragement that I've gotten from Nike. And the Jordan brand, without question, has been supportive and been right there to help me out. And it's been amazing to me the response that I've gotten from people who I've known and worked with and who have just encouraged me and embraced the fact that I've got this past, but they're looking at who I am today and what I've done since that time period, and they're really accepting me for who I am today. And it's been amazing.
I want to talk about probably the most important conversation you had, because you went and spent time with the sister of the man and his two children who had been obviously living with that trauma and pain of the incident. What was that conversation like?
So to me, one of the best things that's come out of this whole process is the fact that I did get to sit down with them and express my remorse and sorrow for what happened. And the fact that I was a crazy, drunk 16-year-old who didn't know what I was doing and really didn't have respect for life. I think one of the things that's hurting our communities right now with all the violence and all is that people don't understand the value of life. I heard something the other day on a commercial where they said, every individual is irreplaceable. And to me, that really speaks to the value of life. But I sat down with them and I expressed my remorse. And each one of them had an opportunity to share how it had impacted them. But each one of them, as they spoke and they shared their feelings, at the end of it, they said, but I forgive you.
What was that like, hearing the words?
It was amazing to hear. And at the end, we hugged. And so to me, that was, like I said, if nothing else came out of this, having the opportunity to get that forgiveness has really made a major difference in my life. And again, I think I'm a perfect example of the fact that a person can change if given the right opportunities, if given the right chance, but it starts inside of you. You have to believe that you can change. And a lot of the folks that I know that I was incarcerated with, the challenge is them believing that they can really change their life, because everything that you're told in that situation is that you can't. This is your lot in life, and this is where you're going to be. And I think, to me, I'm a prime example that if someone really wants to change and it's in their heart and they're given the opportunity to do so, you can. You can change your life and you can move on and make a contribution to society. The problem is the program I was involved in doesn't exist today. So if I was coming out today, I wouldn't be able to do what I've done. I wouldn't be able to give back what I've been able to give back and make the contribution that I've been able to make to the world.
Well, I think that you sharing your story and the work that you continue to do to give back and the impact that you're now having with young people is extremely important. The three takeaways I took from once I read the book and once we started talking to each other is, one, the power of forgiveness and how important it is, whether you are the person who is seeking it or it's being sought from you, the importance of that. The second was the power of redemption, how inspiring that story can be, giving people a second chance. And I think the third thing was holding on to trauma, holding on to a story, holding on to a secret, being closeted in any way, whatever it is, what that does to you physically and mentally, and having that come out makes you a better person and hopefully inspires the people around you. So thank you for being an inspiration, Larry.
And thank you.
The BOF podcast is edited and produced by Emma Clark, Kate Vartan, and Eric Bria in the BOF studio team.